Cliff, thank you very much for doing this. How are you?
I am well. I am well. No, thank you guys for having me, man. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing well. I'm just wondering if you've calmed down after watching the end to that Seahawks-Patriots game on Sunday night, man. That was a thriller.
Oh, my goodness, wasn't it? You know, it seems to come down to the end of the game every single time I've watched the Seahawks play New England in the last decade, it feels like, you know. But it was definitely entertaining. It was fun to watch, and obviously we were happy with the outcome here in Seattle.
Well, I'm sure you were, and that's where you have your residence now. That's where you've decided to stay post-career. It's been 3 years since you took a snap, but when it comes down to the last drive and it comes down to 1 yard, and we know what 1 yard means between these two teams, do you find yourself just right back there emotionally?
You know what? I didn't process it that way. You know, a lot of times, only when people bring it up, it's like, oh, you know, you know, New England, the 1 yard line, and then you talk about the last game and all these different things, then it starts to bring those emotions back of, man, I could have had me a second ring, you know. But overall, though, you know, it's just fun watching these guys compete.
Well, and one of your ex-teammates is at the head of the class right now. During a lot of your time in Seattle, the Seahawks were all about defense. Now it is the Russell Wilson show. In your estimation, you got there in 2013. What's been the biggest improvement in Russell Wilson's game from the time you first became his teammate until now?
You know what? What's interesting with Russ is you know, first time I walk into the locker room, you know, he's one of the first people to meet me and greet me, should I say, and, you know, just building that relationship, that friendship over the years. And for me personally, I'm not surprised at how much he's just gotten better. And it's every single year. It's not even, you know, he has a down year. Like literally since 2013, he has gotten better, whether that's yards, whether that's, you know, the deep ball, whatever the case may be. And he's just continued to keep getting better. And to see the success and seeing it come around full circle, because early in his career, he didn't necessarily have to be that man. He didn't have to be what we're seeing today. You know, he had a stout defense that was kind of the backbone of that team. And you know, he just kind of had to learn the game, right? Now he's learned. He's picked up so much from those years, and he's continuing to execute. And it's just been great to watch his growth.
You'd been in the league 5 years before you landed in Seattle. And, look, a lot of people are coming off of last week saying, hey, Joe Burrow and the Bengals, they're not ready to go, but that guy's got it. When did you first look at Russell Wilson and say, oh, that guy's got it?
Oh, man. You know what? It would be my second season in Seattle, the NFC Championship game against Green Bay. That's when I realized Russell Wilson was the real deal. And yes, you know, his stats weren't necessarily that great that game. I think he threw 4 or 5 interceptions, to be exact. But the one thing that put him over the edge for me and as far as for his mindset and just wanting to be great was – you know, that fourth quarter rolls around and he looks everybody in their eye and like, listen, I got you guys. And, you know, some of the guys are like, bro, you're part of the reason why we're down right now. And he's like, no, all I need is a chance. All I need is a chance, man, and I got you guys. And he went out there and made some things happen. So that's when, for me, as a competitor and just understanding that mindset, that's when it was like, you know what? He's really about that game. He's serious. He's the truth because he really believes all he needs is a chance and he'll pull it out.
That is one of the craziest games I have ever witnessed. I covered that game. That's the onside kick. That is the Luke Wilson two-point convert. That is John Ryan throwing a touchdown pass to Gary Gilliam. Canadian fans remember that.
That was a Cliff, great game.
It certainly was. Yeah, not for Green Bay fans, but that's a different story. Cliff Avril, Super Bowl champion, 74 sacks in his NFL career, joining us this morning on the Scott Rintoul Show. Which quarterbacks were the most difficult for you to deal with during your playing days? Were they the guys who moved around a lot or the guys who got rid of the football really quickly?
Oh, of course. I mean, you know, it's going to be the guys that move around in the pocket. It's this, the guys, you know, you face the Peyton Mannings, the Drew Brees, the Tom Brady's of the world. Don't get me wrong. They're elite. They're great at what they do. But one thing I did know is once I beat my guy, that guy would be in the pocket. You know, once I beat that offensive tackle, I knew they would be in that pocket. They'd be sitting there, you know, looking, making their reads. The guys that are extremely difficult for pass rushers are the ones that are, you know, a little more athletic, as they would say. The runners, the Russell Wilsons of the league, the Cam Newtons, And most people forget Aaron Rodgers used to run too, right? So those guys are usually the harder ones to go against, because not only do you have to beat the guy in front of you, you also have to try to figure out where the heck the quarterback is too. So, you know, those more athletic, those runners, that those guys that, you know, they make their first couple of reads and will take off, those are the harder guys to go against.
Well, and now we're seeing a different level of that, with all due respect to the guys you mentioned, because NFL franchises are giving players they wouldn't normally have given a chance. We're in a different era now. Lamar Jackson probably doesn't get a chance before, but, man, I can't imagine what it's like trying to deal with him. Kyler Murray is the same way.
Oh,
is
man.
It Lamar Jackson than everybody else, or are there a couple other guys in his category in your mind?
I mean, Lamar Jackson, man, it's impressive to see some of the things he's doing out there. You know, he doesn't care who's he going to get, he doesn't care who he's going against. You know, he'll make you look silly out there. But, you know, I was just watching the highlights on Kyler Murray, man. He's not too far off either, as far as for just having that swag and being able to shake guys and different things like that. But, you know, it's hard to go against what Lamar is doing out there. You know, when it comes down to just being a pure athlete, being able to go out there and make guys look silly, Lamar is that guy right now.
You mentioned Cam Newton. You played a lot of big games against Cam Newton when he was with Carolina and the Seahawks and Panthers going head-to-head in the playoffs. Where is Cam Newton's game at relative to the guy you faced when he was playing with the Panthers?
You know what? It was good to see Cam kind of looking like himself. Obviously, the last couple of years, you know, with injuries and whatnot, he hasn't been able to get back to that Cam Newton that I used to go up against, where, you know, he's just causing havoc, whether it's in the run game, getting the ball to Greg Olsen, he was just a terror out there, right? But to see him this past weekend in these last 2 weeks, honestly, it's been great to see him being able to implement what makes him so great as far as for running the ball. You know, they run the power with him and different things like that. But also seeing them try to implement more of, you know, the Bill Belichick stuff, you know, whether it's the quick passes and different things like that. So to answer your question, you know, he's coming around, but I think he's going to be even better now because he's actually making some of the right reads to get the ball to the right guys and, you know, just getting those passes in, and also understanding that, you know, he can still run the ball as well.
Man, everybody talks about the touchdowns he scored. He dropped some dimes in that game, throwing for 397 against the Seahawks. Julian Edelman has his best day ever, which is saying something considering what he had with Tom Brady, isn't it?
Exactly. I mean, Edelman, with Tom Brady forever and a day, and put up some crazy numbers through the years, you know, in the playoffs. They're known to be, you know, a great 1-2 punch. But then you see Cam come in there and allow him to have one of his best days ever as a professional, when you had a GOAT in Tom Brady, leading the charge. So to see all that, it's impressive. But again, it goes back to what I was saying about Cam. You know, he's not just that runner anymore. Like, they're trying to implement, you know, these passes to allow him to be great in that space as well. And then you add the twist with him being able to run the ball. That's a tough combination to deal with as a defense.
He played 10 years in the National Football League as a defensive end with the Lions and the Seahawks. Cliff Averill joining us this morning on the Scott Rintoul Show. Part of the reason Cam was able to locate those receivers, he had some time. You know this as well as I do. The Seahawks, they are having trouble generating a pass rush. Now they lose Bruce Irvin. How does Ken Norton go about getting pressure on opposing quarterbacks right now based on the personnel Seattle currently has on defense?
Sounds like we'll be seeing a lot of Jamal Adams in the backfield. That's what it sounds like. You know, your personnel is what you have right now. You know, you're not going to go out there. You're not going to find too many pass rushers out there. Cliff Averill's not coming out of retirement. Michael Bennett's probably not coming out of retirement. You know, and so now you just have to – you have some elite players on your team. You talk about Bobby Wagner. You talk about a K.J. Wright. You talk about Jamal Adams on the back end. So, and Jamal, I mean, to be honest with you, for me personally, I've never been so impressed with an individual and how they play the game of football. You know, I mean, the energy that he brings, he's knocking balls down, you know, week one, he's knocking balls down against, you know, Julio Jones. And then the next play, he's in the backfield smacking, you know, the quarterback. You know, that's not things that we're used to seeing from a safety in particular. So I can see them implementing that, where they're blitzing him off the edge a little bit, where they're creating different blitzes for him to be able to get that extra pressure that they need, because they're going to need it. You know, like you just said, the pass rush, it hasn't been much. Losing Bruce, a veteran leadership as well, it's going to hurt. So you have to find different ways of getting other guys involved that can get after the quarterback as well.
You're right, Jamal Adams has been all over the film in the first couple of weeks. That is very high praise for you to say. I've never been so impressed with an individual defensive player, because you played with Earl Thomas. You played with the Legion of Boom. How would you compare him to Earl Thomas and or Cam Chancellor, who were the safeties during your heydays?
I think they're just two different styles of players, three different, I guess, with those guys that you mentioned. And the reason why I say I haven't been so – one, I can honestly say – I knew of Jamal, but I didn't know. I never paid attention to the Jets. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't a you know, Sunday night I'm looking forward to watching type thing. So I didn't keep tabs on him as much. But with him being here in Seattle, you know, you get to see the games. You get to see how much of an impact he puts on these games. But the biggest thing for him that's been so impressive in the first 2 weeks, again, is the wide range of different things that he's able to do and how he puts his footprints on games. You know, like I said, he's in the passing game where he'll knock balls down, you know, and then he'll turn around and you know, be sacking the quarterback. Then he get a tackle for loss on a reverse play or something like that. Just seeing the wide range of different things that he can do. You know, you talk about Cam Chancellor. Cam does a lot of similar things, but Cam wasn't, you know, the guy that you expected to cover, you know, for a long period of time or anything like that, but he was the enforcer. Earl Thomas, his sideline to sideline and speed is no one really can mess with what he was able to do. So it's just a wide range of different types of players, but they're all, I mean, obviously have been great in their own right.
Yeah, it does feel like he's almost a hybrid between the two. Pretty nice player to have in that defensive backfield in Seattle. Within the division, man, the attrition for the San Francisco 49ers. They lose two massive pieces on the D-line this past weekend. Nick Bosa, Solomon Thomas, both gone for the year. They have now signed a former Lion and Seahawk in Ziggy Ansil, and they've already pushed up now Deion Jordan from the practice roster as well. How does the personnel now change what San Francisco and that defense is capable of?
I mean, obviously losing Bosa is huge. You know, that boy, he played so well last year for them, you know, as a rookie, and you only expected them to build off of that. So that's going to hurt them a little bit. And their defense plays a big role in why they had so much success last year. The D-line played a big role in why that defense was so elite last year. You know, the D-line coach, Chris Kocurek, he was my D-line coach in Detroit. So I understand the philosophy and the method of what they want to do. And it's all about being disruptive up front and allow all the guys on the back end to be themselves. So they're going to have to try to find that. They're going to have to try to find, hopefully they can get Dee Ford back. You know, I think his neck or back has been bothering him a little bit. So they're going to have to find ways to be disruptive up front. It's going to take some time now. They're not going to look like the same defense for the first couple of weeks of, you know, getting these players involved. But over time, knowing Chris Kocurek, knowing Saleh, who was the D coordinator, who was here in Seattle with us as well during our Super Bowl years, just understanding what they want to do, it's going to take some time to get that. But, you know, with those coaches, they're going to find the right players to be able to execute.
Yeah, incorporating Ansah and Deion Lewis, or Deion Jordan, I should say, might be a little difficult for them, but fortunately for them, they've got a soft part of the schedule. At least it would appear that with the Giants this week and then the Eagles and the Dolphins. In conversation with Cliff Averill this morning right here on the Scott Rintoul Show, a lot of questions coming out of this week about Drew Brees and some about Tom Brady as well. Questions about how much each of those two guys has left. What do you see when you watch those two players right now?
Well, Drew Brees being a Boilermaker, you know, I can't say too much negative about him. No, I'm just joking. But you know, it's interesting because, you know, they just remind you that they're human beings, that they can have bad days and whatnot as well, right? But one thing I do know about those two individuals, you know, obviously playing against them and knowing them a little bit as well, they're the ultimate competitors. They know how to make adjustments. You know, if he's not feeling like he can throw that deep ball anymore, guess what we're going to do? We're going to start switching things up. We're going to start letting Alvin Kamara get the ball a little bit more in the flats and different things like that and still get the crazy numbers that he needs, right? Not having Thomas last week probably hurts a little bit as well. So I just understand that these guys are true vets. It's not like they're in the trenches getting beat up every day, getting moved out of the pocket or anything like that. It's more of a mental thing for those guys, and I think they will make the adjustments. I think the coaches will make the adjustments as they see fit if they're not making the throws that we're used to seeing them make.
I'm glad you brought that up, because as I watched that Saints against the Raiders game, everybody was talking Drew Brees. Oh, he doesn't have this, he doesn't have that. I was very critical of Sean Payton and the game plan in that game they didn't even get the ball to Emmanuel Sanders until the late stages. I think that's as much on the coaching as it is on the quarterback. Am I wrong there?
It's both for sure. It weighs on both. But you got to realize when you have somebody like a Drew Brees on your team or even Tom Brady, honestly, those guys are making the decisions, right? You make the play calls and different things like that. But those guys, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they're like, you know what, I don't like that call on this play, coach. You know what I mean? Like they can make those types of decisions because of who they are and what they've been able to do. So it falls on both evenly, I would say. It falls on Drew Brees probably a little bit more as far as for, you know, just making sure he sees the right people to get him to and getting the ball to his playmakers.
One of the conversations we were having earlier in the show today, Cliff, was about difficult franchises to turn around. You played for one that's still going through it in Detroit. You were there for 5 years. Outside of just the talent on the rosters, because you guys had some really good players in Detroit, how would you describe the difference between the Detroit Lions and the Seattle Seahawks as far as the organizations are concerned?
Oh, wow. I think culture. That's what I came up with, is culture as far as for how – ownership, it starts with ownership, how they believe in the game, and then it trickles down to the coaches and different things like that. You know, when I was in Detroit one, you know, I was grateful for the opportunity to be able to go play for those guys. I was grateful for just having the opportunity to be in that building and you know, just learn about the NFL and what it's really about and the business side of it. Because you learn really quick when teams aren't that good. You learn real quick as far as for the business side of things. You know, you see so many players in and out the locker room getting cut left and right because, you know, they're trying to figure it out. Coaches want to keep their jobs too, right? So I learned that, and I was grateful for that. But I would say culture plays a big role because when I got to Seattle, obviously Coach Carroll and being the excited person that he is, Paul Allen, the owner of the team, also being an individual that, you know what, hey, we're gonna leave everything in this man's hands, and we're gonna get you guys everything you need. We're gonna make sure the players are good. We're gonna make sure, you know, we have recovery systems put in place. We're gonna do whatever it takes to make sure these guys are playing at a high level. And I don't know if every team really has that culture. At the end of the day, every team is a business, right? So they want to cut costs. Then maybe they don't want to get 5 ice tubs. They'll have 2 ice tubs. Well, guess what? Some guys aren't getting an ice tub bath that day. So it's just different things, little small things like that, I think makes a big difference in teams having so much success. And, so I would say culture and how the ownership believes in their players and how they view the players makes a big difference.
I find that really interesting because I think the assumption from the fan is that ownership, players, there's not much interaction. There's so many levels in between. But players talk, and guys have those conversations in the off season, don't they?
Oh, players talk to each other. Now, I will say, you know, there is, other than the quarterback, they're probably the only ones that are in communication all the time with the ownership. I probably talked to Paul Allen in my 5 years maybe twice. Like full-on conversations, you know, so it's that is still there, but players do talk about organizations. You know, if you're a veteran player, you're going to call around. If, you know, Detroit, Cleveland, whoever, whatever team it is, you're going to call around and ask about the organization if that fits what you're trying to do.
Yeah, that's what I was more getting at, players talking, and we all know that goes a very long way when guys become free agents or where they want to settle down. Cliff, I really enjoyed this conversation, man. Hope we can do it again soon in the near future. Keep up the good work. All the best to you and your family, and thank you very much for taking the time today.
As always, man, thank you for having me. I appreciate it, and we'll talk soon.